Today on Maine Calling, the meaning of service and what it looks like in Maine. The term service can have far-reaching meaning. Of course, there's military service, which calls for a dedication to defending others. Then there are the first responders, whether they're ER nurses, police officers, or firefighters. But beyond that, there are so many other forms of service. The town counselors, food pantry workers, teachers, and volunteers of all stripes. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we talk with people all over Maine who are committed to serving their communities. We'll hear about the National Guard, working as a civil servant, organizations like the Maine Climate Corps, and about the range of volunteer opportunities all across the state. We find out what their work entails, what motivates them, and what needs are still out there. Does serving foster a spirit of empathy? Why does altruism matter? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we will examine what it means to serve. There's more to it than just being helpful. We'll talk with people in Maine about why service matters and what it's all about. Joining me, Brigadier General Diane Dunn is Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard and Commissioner of Maine's Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. And also with us is Brittany Gleixer-Hayat. She's Executive Director of Volunteer Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Is there someone in your community who exemplifies the meaning of service? What do you do to serve in some way? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And Commissioner Dunn, I'm going to turn to you to share a little bit of your personal story, because you've spent a life of military service. Was this something that you were drawn to since you were a kid?
Good morning. Thank you. Actually, no, it wasn't. And I can account for another type of service that a lot of people aren't familiar with, but I actually served in the greater Bangor area as a social worker for the first 11 years that was coupled with my military service. So I was a traditional guardsman and served in that capacity in a nonprofit organization while also serving in the National Guard. But I pretty much fell into my military career through advocacy of a college roommate's brother who asked me to join ROTC. And through that class and through learning different skills, I found a niche, and I love the competitiveness and the opportunity to build leadership skills. And that's really where the passion took off from.
So we're trying to tease out the meaning of service today, because we did a whole show not long ago about giving and lending a hand to others, which is obviously very much overlapping with service. But what is it to you that sets service apart, or how would you define that term?
For me, service is an opportunity to give back and an opportunity to bring to bear any particular individual skills or strengths to a larger body, larger organization, larger group. And for me, that has been the case for the last 37 years here in the Maine National Guard. But through my family connections to the Guard, it's really been a growth experience and something that I treasure, the opportunity to learn, work, and serve here in Maine. And so I find that it all is connected, and to be able to build upon my own individual strengths through the learning that I've gained through the military just helps and aid in that service.
Well, we'll come back to talking more about the National Guard in a bit. I'm going to take a chance to ask Britt about her take on the meaning of service, because at Volunteer Maine, I mean, it takes on all different forms, but when you hear that word, is there something that sets it apart that makes service different than just giving?
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. It's a great question. I think for me personally, what sets it apart is the public good aspect of it. So when I think about service, it's about putting the mission and the people first. And that brings with it a lot of responsibility, actually, because defining what is the public good and how to best address it and how to bring programs and your work to bear to advance the public good is something that requires listening and getting out there and understanding what is needed. So in that sense, it's a big responsibility, but it's also a huge privilege. I mean, speaking again personally from my perspective, working here in the state of Maine, but then also years working in federal service with the United States Agency of International Development for International Development, it's always been a major privilege to be able to get up every day and go to work thinking about advancing the public good.
Well, you've been able to compare it then at the federal level and then what's going on in Maine. Do you think the state of Maine has a culture of service that might be special or different in any way?
I don't just think it, we know it from data. There is census data that's gathered every couple of years about this, and 35% of Mainers volunteer compared to a national average of 22%. And that makes us third in the country for volunteerism. And we're also first in the nation for attending public meetings and participating in groups. This makes Maine really unique in terms of the level of engagement. And we also know, here in Volunteer Maine, that there's a high degree of informal volunteering and service as well. And this is really important, particularly in rural communities, because many services that are delivered to people are reliant on that kind of informal, support. So there is a deep, culture of service in Maine, and we're really lucky to have that here.
Can you put a number? Is there a way to quantify the value of volunteerism in Maine for the economy?
Yeah, and I'll just take this as a moment, Cindy, to talk about maybe two things. There's national service and then there's community service. And so volunteerism, what you explained, is more of the community service portion of it. And to put a dollar on that, every hour of volunteer service is valued at $32.13. So that is to say, if giving of your time is an extremely tangible way to have impact and really meaningful for us here in the state. But then national service, which is programs like AmeriCorps Vista, like AmeriCorps Seniors, but also Peace Corps. But these programs are not, flexible, unpaid. These are more, longer term, nearly full-time opportunities to provide dedicated service. These also have a huge amount of impact. We know again from studies that every $1 of federal funding that's put into these AmeriCorps programs creates $17 in economic value. But just one more note on this, it's not just like the dollar value of the time. We know that service, particularly national service like AmeriCorps service, has three levels of impact on the individual. They themselves gain tangible skills, not only just young people coming out of college, but some people mid-career or changing their lives. They could do a portion, a period of service, and it gives them a lot of employable skills and a new perspective. It also has an impact on community, right? Because the communities are getting services through these programs. And then finally, and I think most importantly, it has an impact on our democracy. It's been shown that social trust and a degree of unity are advanced through service opportunities. You meet people from different walks of life while you're serving together to advance the public good, and it increases a level of trust and tolerance. And that's something that's really important right now. So there's a lot of impacts of service and volunteerism.
Yeah, lots of repercussions. And we're going to hear from some folks in the community doing working with some of those AmeriCorps programs and what they actually do. But turning back to you, Commissioner Dunn, we do want to explore a little more about the Maine National Guard. A lot of people hear about the National Guard, especially recently with people getting dispatched in parts of the country. But I think that there are a lot of people who don't quite understand the unique element that the National Guard brings to the military. So give us a little basic explanation of how that works. You oversee the National Guard for Maine.
Sure. So the department that I lead, the Department of Defense, Veterans and Emergency Management, is made up of three different bureaus, one of that being the Military Bureau, the Army, and Air National Guard here in Maine. So we have Air National Guard units in the Bangor area and in South Portland, and then Army National Guard units across the state in multiple communities. And there are opportunities for people to join the National Guard and an opportunity to become what we call a citizen soldier, citizen airman. So it's not either or, whereas when someone joins on active duty, they leave the state and they go off and perform their federal mission. The benefit of the National Guard is you get to learn, work, and serve right here in the state of Maine, and serve in many ways in a civilian capacity, in a civilian job, as an employer or an employee. And also build your service opportunities in your local communities. And as I was talking off air, this opportunity this morning gave me the chance to reflect in how our organizations are already nested and connected. And through our partnership with emergency management and the ways that our volunteers help perform emergency support to our local communities at a time of need. And oftentimes that's the National Guard. Today we're having a little bit of a mess outside, and many people can reflect back to 1998 and the ice storm and how the National Guard came through to help all the communities to open roads, restore power, check on people, and making sure that they were safe. And that's one of the benefits of the National Guard is you are a community member living in your community, working in your civilian capacity, and also being able to serve at the state level in times of need when called upon by the governor. And that's an amazing opportunity for folks to capture many of the skills that they have in delivering them right at home.
That's great. Great explanation for what the citizen soldier really is. Thank you. We have now calling in Maine State Representative Morgan Riley. He represents Westbrook, and he founded America's Service Commission's State Service Caucus, and he also sponsored legislation to create the Maine Climate Corps and Maine Service Fellows. So thanks for joining us, Representative Riley.
Thank you so much for having me on Maine Calling.
Yeah, so tell us about these service opportunities you help create for people in Maine, the Climate Corps and also Service Fellows. How can people get involved and what do they do?
Yeah, so the Maine Service Fellows is a state-based service corps. So Volunteer Maine and I designed this back in 2020 when I was first entering the legislature. And a state-based corps is a great way to be able to build capacity in the state, particularly among our rural communities that might have a harder time accessing other national service programming like AmeriCorps. So the program is designed specifically with those rural communities in mind. And the service fellows currently have fellows stationed across multiple counties working on issues related to housing, to public health, to working on local resiliency work. And it's open for particularly like recent college graduates. And
Okay,
then
great.
the, yep.
Go ahead,
And the Maine Climate Corps, so that was founded also back during my first term. And the Climate Corps is set up as like a network. So many programs can qualify to be a part of the network. But we have received state funding in the past. We had received state funding to run a program up with the Down East Community Partners working on home energy efficiency projects. And then this past year, we secured more funding for like a working waterfront core with Maine Sea Grant and with the University of Maine Engineering School to have engineering students help coastal and island communities with working waterfront infrastructure resiliency projects.
Okay, so it sounds like if somebody is thinking of forming a group, maybe a youth group or something wanting to do environmental projects they could potentially apply to get funding from Maine Climate Corps?
Yeah, and they should reach out to Volunteer Maine.
Okay, great. Well, what about yourself? You've been so involved with service, becoming a legislator and focusing on these service opportunities. What motivated you to make that your focus?
Yeah, so I mean, like growing up, I grew up in Westbrook, Maine. My grandmother, she ran the local food pantry. And my dad served on the city council. And so, I mean, they shared their love of civic duty and public service with me at an early age. And then I had neighbors who were World War II veterans. And then when I was in eighth grade, I had was taking a high school course that I had to interview a World War II veteran. And that had a real impact on me. And it actually led me to try to preserve as many of those stories as possible in high school. That actually led to my first book, Neighborhood Heroes. And the men and women who shared their stories with me, I mean, they had a profound impact on my life. They passed along many of life lessons, but there was like a life lesson that connected all their stories together. And it was about leading a life of service. And they weren't necessarily just talking about their military service, but I mean, after the war, they continued to find ways to continue to serve their community. And we're kind of always asking themselves, how can I make my piece of the world better? Not just for myself, but for those around me. And I found that very appealing. And that got me asking when I entered college and then would ultimately lead me to run for the legislature after I graduated, but had me asking, how would I serve? And then in the legislature has had me asking questions like, what does service look like? And how can we provide the opportunity to enable any person in this state or this country the opportunity to be able to serve?
Well, that's great to just hear about any one person saying something to you can really make a difference in your life. So thank you so much for sharing your story. That was Morgan Riley, who represents Westbrook, serving in the Maine House of Representatives. And we'll go to a caller now. This is Courtney calling from North Haven. Hi, Courtney. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm the crew chief of North Haven EMS. We're out on North Haven Island, and we're an all-volunteer service, as is our fire service. So we're a bunch of teachers and parents and contractors and other people living in the community who decided to make the commitment to become emergency responders and ambulance drivers, and it is the most fulfilling way that I can imagine to serve the community.
Gosh, that's impressive. What's the training like? How do people who don't have backgrounds in this get to be able to do it?
So to become an EMT, it's a class. It's often offered through community colleges. I actually got my instructor certificate so that I can teach the class, and I'm teaching a class starting in a couple weeks that's focused on the island students. I've gotten to take the class in the past. I started as a first responder, which is somewhat fewer hours of a class, but just as much fun and just as interesting. So it's a pretty significant time commitment, but so rewarding.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm sure that is happening in other communities in Maine. Good to hear what you're doing there, Courtney. And Commissioner Dunn, with you overseeing MEMA, I mean, is this really the kind of the glue holding Maine together where other folks can't necessarily get to help in time?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Courtney, and to all of your team that volunteers and you know, serves at the very local level. That is what it is so important for folks to understand, and where that passion comes from and what we'll call the service bug gets started is through volunteerism, and someone understands how great it is to be able to give back and then wants to do more and then starts into the training and adds more experience. And MEMA is totally reliant on local volunteers that make up the first responders in the community and those that participate in additional training and exercises that then broadens through the county level up to the state level. And it was those folks that whether it's a local fire department volunteer, an ambulance driver, a shelter worker, all of those individuals come together to create such a force in the community that makes Maine so resilient. But I will encourage listeners and others to recognize the fact that Maine is an aging population, and we need to challenge folks at the earliest age to figure out where they can help volunteer. And it starts young in the school programs and the different civic organizations where kids can, you know, sell cookies or do different things to bring to bear some type of greater good for the community or for them, their organization. And through those types of opportunities, as Representative Riley talked about, individuals can find that spirit of service for others, and that it can continue to grow, and then people can become more practiced in their service and continue to lead at different levels and organize others and bring them together for the benefit of our local community, and then as that spans out across the state. And that is something that Maine Emergency Management truly relies on.
Yeah, well, we are going to take a quick break. We are hearing all about ways to serve in Maine. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Why does service matter, and what are the repercussions for society? My guests are Brittany Gleixer-Hyatt, Executive Director of Volunteer Maine, and Brigadier General Diane Dunn. She's Commissioner of the State Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. And she's also Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard. We invite you to join the conversation. What service opportunities do you know of? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And joining us now is Dr. Jennifer Jane, Director of the Senior Companion Program with University of Maine Center on Aging. Thanks for calling, Jennifer.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for having me on the show. I wanted to talk about the AmeriCorps Seniors across the state of Maine, and it's a national program that connects people 55 and older with volunteer opportunities that make a real difference. So here in Maine, there are three programs across the state. There's foster care program, which volunteers mentor and tutor kids in schools and child care centers, and you can access those through PennQuist and Opportunity Alliance. And then there's RSVP, the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, where individuals have helped local nonprofits flexible ways, such as bone builders across the state. And you can find various opportunities that are available in the Aroostook Agency on Aging, Catholic Charities, and here at the University of Maine. And then, as Cindy was saying, I'm the Senior Companion Program Director, which I direct at the University of Maine, of course, and on at the Center on Aging. It is also available both in down in Southern Maine through Opportunities Alliance, and it's where our volunteers provide companionship for older adults who are socially isolated, and not just older adults, but adults. It might be we also provide respite for family caregivers who are caring for a loved one in their home.
Wow. So those also, three programs all sound so they're filling huge needs. The first one you mentioned, that's the foster grandparents program. Is that right? So
yeah.
People are okay. Yeah. Let's go through foster grandparents. There's senior companions. There's RSVP. For any of those, can people just step up and say, I want to get involved? What does it entail to get involved?
They have to be 55 years and older and want to give back, as we've been talking about this for the show. For example, senior companion and foster care parents roles are usually 15 to 20 hours a week, and these are non-tax, small stipend. They receive a small stipend to help with expenses for low-income older adults. And flexible hours, you just need to be 55 and older and live in Maine.
That's great. Again, a huge need there. Just one question about what do you observe among the volunteers who help others through these programs? What do you feel like they come away with?
My volunteers really enjoy the impact they provide for the people they work with. They get to provide a service that they enjoy, that they come away with feeling that they have a purpose. We were talking about people who are socially isolated, but also our volunteers, they're not socially isolated, but they're gaining social capacity
direction.
Or revenue. And then feeling like they're providing for their community.
Sure. Well, thank you for describing those wonderful programs that are part of what you're doing there. So that was Dr. Jennifer Jane, and she's with UMaine's Center on Aging. Britt, I wanted to turn to you because, you know, we talk about all these great opportunities to serve and help, but are there barriers to some people where they wish they had the time and energy and resources to be able to help others, but it's not that easy to do?
Yeah, thanks for bringing this up. Before I get to that, I just want to thank Jennifer for that overview. And if anybody wants to know where all these programs are, you can go to volunteermaine.gov. And we have a list of all the senior companion programs and all of the email addresses to reach out to the programs if you want to try to get involved. There are hundreds of AmeriCorps senior opportunities across the state available. But on this barrier point, I really appreciate what Brigadier General Dunn was bringing up in terms of, you know, youth service being the single, it is we've learned the single biggest indicator of adult service is youth service. You heard it in Representative Riley's experience. I agree with what was said. And, you know, national service and volunteerism, it really works best when it reflects the full diversity of the communities that they're serving. And that full diversity, let's be honest, cannot be represented. And the reason for that is not due to lack of interest, but it's often due to lack of access, lack of time, lack of financial stability. It is the case that we mostly middle-aged adults, especially Gen X with older adults, are often the ones who are doing most of the volunteering here in Maine and drive our very high rankings nationwide. But what we do need to do is think of ways to get younger adults in particular engaged and more. And part of that is thinking about more flexible volunteer and service opportunities for them. But there are other ways as well, and we're trying to think through this and do a better job, because that's our role, right, is to help make service and volunteerism grow in the state. And one of the ways that employers can help in this regard is they can provide paid service days to their employees. It's a huge impact if they say, you know, here are a couple days a year you are allowed to use for service in the community. The other thing we need, frankly speaking, I mean, this is across the board, is federal and state investment. Without that kind of systemic investment and these kinds of opportunities, you're not going to see people being able to access them. So it is an access issue, but it's one that many Mainers work hard to overcome, and we're trying to help them do that because that's our duty.
Okay, well, we are going to another representative today. Representative Deka Dalak is on the line. She serves in the Maine House of Representatives for South Portland. She is the former mayor of South Portland and has done a great deal of community work in her time in Maine. Thanks for calling, Representative Dalak.
Thank you for having me.
So, as I mentioned, you've served in many capacities over the years. Tell us a little bit about your own personal background. You're not originally from Maine.
Yeah, I'm from Somalia, East Africa, born and raised, came to the United States about some 30, almost 4 years ago, and lived in Atlanta, Georgia, several years, and then moved to Maine in 2005.
Okay, and you've been in leadership roles from that time on, I know. So what motivated you to step up and to run for office?
That's a great question. To be honest, the decision was really in a collective way, if you will. It was from the community, it was from my family, my friends, and folks that I've been building relationship with over the years. It was from my lived experience. For years, I have also been deeply involved in my community, listening to people's struggles, advocating for families and organizing around issues such as housing, education, and safety, which is, as we all know, is important to every American in our communities. I kept hearing the same concerns over and over, and I realized that many of the people most affected by these decisions were not on the table at the time. So I, those were some of the reasons that I ran for office. I felt like that was the natural step for me to make. I did not wake up one day wanted to.
Oops, there's Representative. Can you hear me, Representative Dock? Yes, we lost you for a bit there, so we hear you now. And if you could just say again, what motivated you to join as an elective official?
Oh my goodness! like I said, it was a collective community ideas, friends and family members asking me. This is my time to run for office because I have always been listening to community members about their struggles. You know, I love listening to people. So I, as you may or may not know, I've been also advocating for families over the years and organizing around issues like housing, issues like education and safety, which we all know most of our communities are really, those are the things that that's in their mind. I also keep hearing over and over the concerns, these particular concerns. And what I also realized was there was nobody who can represent them in those tables that the decisions were made at the time. So that kind of made me run for office. And it was just a natural step, if you will, for me to make our next step. In any case, we do not wake up one day and say, you know what, let me run for office. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of preparation. It takes a lot of believing in yourself, believe in the community that you are serving. So it took a lot of, you know, time for me to realize that it's the correct time for me to do this. So those were the reasons that I did that. And again, I cannot emphasize enough for that collective African proverb that says Ubuntu, I am because we all are. That also made me do this.
That's a great one. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that's a great reminder to folks, too, that it does take commitment, that it's not just something you jump into casually. So thank you for calling. That was Representative Deka Dalak from South Portland. We have so many calls coming in. I'm going now to Eric calling from Gorham. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of briefly touch on service work in the context of addiction recovery. Service work in particular with Alcoholics Anonymous is sort of a crucial part of the whole 12-step program of recovery laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really the 12th step. And it really comes down to, like, if you look at sort of the triangle of AA, there's recovery, unity, and service, right? And without service, it's kind of a useless program at the end of the day, because it really does teach us to be thinking of other people instead of ourselves, which is really kind of like the crux of alcoholism, is this addiction to self and selfishness and self-centeredness, right? So service work takes us outside of ourselves. There's many, many ways to get into it. For people who are brand new to addiction recovery, you can stand at a door and shake somebody's hand. You know, from there, there's many, many ways. I mean, people take meetings into prisons, into the Salvation Army. You can speak at meetings. And really, at the end of the day, you can sponsor people and take people through the process and help them kind of understand, you know, the solution to everything. So without service work, I don't think there really would be the AA sort of structure that we have today. And it's free to get involved, and it's life-changing stuff. So leave it there.
Oh, really good to hear from you, Eric. And thank you for emphasizing that
that selflessness has its own benefits, right? People can feel, like you said, get outside of yourself. So that's actually kind of a good for both sides. But thank you for calling. We do need to take another quick break. We are talking all about the ways that people can serve in Maine and why it matters. Our phone number, 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling, and we will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Why do people choose to serve others, and what does it mean for a community? And what are some ways to get involved with service in Maine? Joining me to talk about the meaning of service are Commissioner Diane Dunn with the Department of Defense, Veterans and Emergency Management, and with the Maine National Guard. And Britt Gleixner-Hyatt is with Volunteer Maine. Share your comments and questions. Tell us about the power of service in your life. Email us at talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram. You can also call 1-800-399-3566. I wanted to just finish. I had read half of an email earlier and didn't get to the organization name. So this was the email from Shane talking about volunteering for the Maine Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, where they work to ensure respectful care for everyone living in a nursing home or assisted living facility anywhere in Maine by having volunteers or staff personally visit every single long-term care facility in the state to meet with residents at least once every quarter. So thank you for letting us know about that, Shane. And now we also have, let's see, calling in now is Peter Bonaparte. He's a senior at Holton High School from Monticello. He has been nominated by state legislators for a U.S. Military Academy spot at West Point, and he's giving us a call right now. Peter, hi. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Ms. Hahn. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your show.
Sure. It's so good to hear from you and get to hear a younger person's perspective. So I guess you are looking at a life of service. Why are you interested in attending military academy?
Well, I've always been interested in serving in the armed forces for our country ever since I was a kid, really. But my main inspiration comes from seeing my family members serve and what it means to them. Especially my great-grandfather. He was a combat journalist during the Korean War, and he would tell me all sorts of stories around the campfire about service and what it meant to him. That's where my inspiration comes from for serving.
And I understand that you also spoke with veterans for a school project, or you also got some inspiration from them?
Yes, I did. I had a project with my English class to go down to the Coal Land Transportation Museum and interview a veteran there. I interviewed Clark Thompson, who served in the Navy.
And I'm assuming his words also helped you think that this was something you might want to do.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it was right after that interview that I decided not to enlist and seek commissioned through a service academy.
Okay. And I have to ask you, there's sort of a stereotype of kids these days being on their phones, on social media, and kind of, you know, being self-absorbed, but you're talking about selflessness and what you want to do. Does that describe you and your peers? Do you think there's a shift, or that stereotype is incorrect?
Well, when I was younger, and I'm sure it's still evident today, my generation has sort of seen service as a way to repay for service that has already been given to them. But now, especially up here in Arista County, I find it to be more evident that there's a growing sense of selflessness in my generation, especially evident through programs that my school has been doing and the surrounding schools, like Reaches Across America and our local Interact Club. But yes, I believe there has been a vast shift in what service means to my generation.
So that's refreshing to hear. It sounds like it's not just you. You think your peers as well are catching what Commissioner Dunn called it, the service bug. Is that just from being exposed to it, you think?
Yes, I would say so. And going back to the phones. I believe that has played a key role with social media and ideas of service being so openly available to the youth. I believe that is playing a key role as well.
Oh, good to know. So positive reason to be on your phone in that case, getting good information. Well, thanks for taking some time out to talk with us today. That was Peter Bonaparte, and he's a Holton High School senior who is aiming to attend West Point Military Academy. Commissioner Dunn, are you surprised? You were nodding. Are you surprised to hear this sort of turn that Peter's talking about of people more interested in service?
Not at all. And so I wanted to thank Peter for that, for his efforts, and congratulate him on his award from his writing for the coal transportation essay. Well done. And his service and participation in sports and his accolades that he has received there all set him up for a great future. And I know from our statistics and our enlistments being up over the past year, that there is a focus that our current population is seeing purpose in service and choosing that volunteer route to serve in the National Guard and in the Armed Forces. And all services right now are exceeding their recruiting goals. And I think that's important to recognize. Often we hear a negative narrative about service and about military service. I think it's so important to articulate the positive aspects of it and where people are choosing in a time where it is all volunteer service that they are choosing, whether it's an academy or staying local and serving. And so, Peter, our recruiters are listening, I'm sure, in the event that you choose a different path. We'll be welcome you here in Maine at any point to stay here in Maine and serve. But again, to any of those that are considering joining, it's not an either or of, you know, military service or civilian or academics. In our settings, we choose to try to help people understand that you can do it all. You can have a life of military service. You can have a professional career. You can have a family. You can serve in other ways, whether it's a school committee or a local fire department. There's so many coaches, teachers, many of them are military members. And we truly appreciate those folks that choose a life of volunteer service here in Maine.
What a good reminder that you can do, you don't have to choose. That's wonderful. So let me read this email from Diane. She says, I recently joined the South Portland Cape Elizabeth Rotary Club. We just wrapped up our annual tree sale at Mill Creek, which gives 100% of proceeds to the local community. I'm thrilled to become part of this amazing community and encourage anyone, young or retired, to join us or a local chapter in their community. So we had hoped to talk a bit about service clubs because they're all over Maine. We've got Lions Club, Rotary Club, Kiwanis, right? Lots and lots. Britt, do you want to touch upon that just since we didn't have somebody calling in?
No, I would just say those are excellent opportunities, and that shows the range of those that exist across the state for people to get involved, something that's more structured, a large community. But there are opportunities across the gamut, and there can be informal opportunities in your town. There could be something more structured. Find something you're passionate about. Do some research. You might find an organization that's looking for someone to help. I guarantee you there's a need. You can look at some volunteer matching websites. We have one. ServeMaine.org is a great place to start to look for opportunities. The United Ways also have volunteer matching websites that are locally driven. That's Volunteer ME. So there's so many ways to find opportunities and that fit your capabilities, your interests, and also your schedule. The important thing is just starting and getting there.
That's great. And let's talk with Rich now, calling from Thomaston. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I'm a member of the Red Cross here in the state of Maine, and I'm what they call a disaster mental health clinician. And one of the things we really are focused on right now are the tremendous amount of fires that we've had. And what my function is to go into those those families that have been involved and have experienced the trauma of a fire, and I give emotional support. But the Red Cross, we're known nationally, but locally, we have a team that goes into whatever community there's been a disaster like this, and we have caseworkers and we have intake workers and a medical team, and we're just an interim, short-term group until the community kind of mobilizes and helps the family out. But I have a number of clients that I'm dealing with right now. We just had a terrible run on fires in the state, and it's really dislodged so many families and placed them in crisis. And I kind of got my start in high school. I went to Brunswick High, and I was in the Key Club, which was the Kiwanis Club, and then joined the Rotary Club and spent a lot of time with them. And then I kind of went on and became a clinical social worker. So, it kind of has been in my blood since I was
Certainly. You've spent your whole life serving. That's great. And I want to take this opportunity to shout out to the firefighters for the fire in Portland and Commissioner Dunn. That was a really heroic effort on those firefighters' part.
Absolutely. And to be able to get that blaze under control in such a short amount of time and protect the rest of the waterfront, it speaks to the coordination and the collaboration that comes from the training that they do year in, year out, and to be prepared for situations like that. And, our thoughts and prayers with all of those that were affected.
Sure. And Rich, thank you for pointing out the mental health side of things that goes on past the immediate emergency. And thanks for the great work that you do in that regard. Let's go to... Mary is calling in from Whitefield. Hi, Mary. What did you want to talk about?
Hi, good morning. I am the volunteer coordinator at our local library. I've been doing that for about 2 years and just incredibly gratifying. I started shortly after retirement. But my question is really around volunteering, stipends, and labor law. And I wonder if Britt might be able to talk about this a little bit. We're told by the Maine State Library that no one in Maine can work on a stipend basis, that anybody who is paid has to be paid the minimum wage. And they sort of seem to be aiming like work that should be done by a professional administrator should not be done by a volunteer. So I wonder if Britt might be able to...
Sure. Mary, thank you for that question. We only have about a minute left, Britt, but I've heard that too, some variation of that. So please clarify.
Well, we're going to have to get back to you with an official response on that. Maybe we can put it up on the website, Cindy. But I think the point is that it's about workforce displacement, right? So you can have service opportunities that displace a job, but you can have volunteer roles that are helping augment and be a force multiplier for your organization. So maybe that's where it's a bit of a distinction. Volunteer opportunities are unpaid, but service opportunities are stipend, but they can't replace jobs. So we would be happy to talk you through that. So please feel free to get in touch with us or anybody who has questions like that. That's our job, is to help you kind of navigate those things so that you can make volunteerism and service work for you to expand your capabilities.
Great. Well, I said we had a minute left, but I wanted to ask you to follow that up anyway with a relatively short answer of just how people can... you touched upon this, but really, how do you make service part of your everyday life and make it easy to do?
It's a habit like anything else. And the earlier you start it, the better. If you have kids, get them involved now. And that's the way to make it part of your everyday life. A habit, start today, look for something doable, and commit. And it can just grow from there. And there's nothing but positive that can come out of that.
Commissioner Dunn, you're nodding. Any extra words
I think
to that?
It's so true. With the slightest engagement of a child, a youth, a high school student, and giving them the opportunity to feel that intrinsic reward of doing something for someone else. That's
well,
perfect.
That is very inspirational. Thank you both so much for joining us today. Brittany Gleixner-Hyatt is Executive Director of Volunteer Maine, and Brigadier General Diane Dunn is Commissioner of the Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. She's also Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard. Today, sound engineer was Sandra Harris, and tomorrow on the show, we will learn all about snowmobiling and how much it contributes to Maine's culture and economy. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.